And we are back. Robert, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, excellent. Well, we have got one of the most controversial members of the men's rights movement here with us today, and we've been looking forward to interviewing him ever since we started the show. Without further ado, I would like to bring Barbarossa on the air. Hello, Barbarossa.
How are you doing, guys?
Oh, excellent. I'm just going to throw out my pretty standard questions before we really get into the meat of the interview. I think Robert had a few excellent questions he wanted to ask you later, so this is going to kind of be a joint tackling here. Why don't
No
you tell us a
problem.
little bit about yourself?
Well, I think at first, before I get into how I got into the men's movement, I was, I came into this movement before when I first got into A Voice for Men radio. I first discovered it probably through one of Chapin's videos. But before that, I was basically in a situation where I thought I was the only person seeing this the societal misandry that all of us have come to know so well. So I was, pretty much looking for. I was in my 20s. I still am in my 20s. But at the time, I was in my 20s and just looking for other men that were noticing this stuff. And I would reach out to other people in school and all that kind of stuff. And they would all acknowledge it, but, no one would kind of declare it openly along with me. My story is I'm just, an everyday student that pretty much got fed up with dealing with it. And that's how I came to the men's movement. There's really not anything, important really about me or anything like that. But, that's how I came across the men's movement.
Wow, you answered pretty much most of the questions I was going to throw out there. very succinctly,
I
add.
It was a process by which. I knew that nobody else was, in my community at least, the men that I speak to, and this is starting to change as the internet presence of the men's movement kind of expands and creeps into, in real life or whatever. People are starting to question it more, and I knew what was integral was that men form some kind of community, whether it be on the internet or otherwise. Where it's normal, it's displayed as normal to openly question this stuff, and so this is why I appreciate what you guys do so much at A Voice for Men, because as far as I'm concerned, at least, you guys are the first real group to start questioning it openly. I mean, you had people like Angry Hangry before and all that, but you guys are the main group that everybody recognizes as I mean, you guys call it the flagship of the men's movement, and I'm in total agreement with that.
Oh yeah, I will tell you though, there are a couple sites out there that provide people just coming in with some really good training as to what's going on, especially as far as current events, places like Anti-Misandry. Is also another good place to go. They're based out of the UK. So you can't.
If you don't
do
have
this
a
con-
then, there yet, Barbaros, to get one.
Well, if you can, just send me, via YouTube, some of the links to these sites, and I'll be glad to promote them on my channel.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Because I'll tell you, the more diversity we get out there with the number of sites that are running these campaigns, the better. And when we look at it from country to country, we're seeing that things are the same all the way around. It doesn't matter where you're at anymore. Misandry is in full effect.
Yeah, and it is all about networking too. So
it is. I agree. Is there anything else about me or whatever that? I have an answer for you.
Well, no, I think Robert had a few questions that he was interested in asking. Robert, if you want, go ahead and take it over.
Okay, great. First of all, Barbarossa, thanks for coming on the show. I'm a huge fan of yours. I know that a lot of people listening right now are, and it's a real pleasure to talk with you in person. But I just wanted to kind of to touch on something you talk about a lot. You're and something you've been criticized for. You're a big proponent of the idea that when it comes to reproduction, men should devise ways of taking total control of reproduction away from women, which is, you know, something that I agree with. I do not think that the monopoly on reproduction that women have right now is something that should be tolerated much longer. It's just wrong. So I'm certainly in agreement with you there. But this has been perceived by many as a mutually exclusive sense. You're a proponent of artificial wombs, the ability for a man to exclude women altogether when it comes to reproduction, if they choose. And I also support this as a basic human right that now women enjoy, which men don't. What about just equalizing reproductive rights and capacities between men and women as a way of combating inequality and normalizing the relationship between the sexes, the genders? I'm talking about male reproductive rights. I'm talking about male fertility control, paternity testing at birth, shared equal parenting laws upon and out of wedlock birth, as well as upon divorce, and accountability for the recipient of court-awarded child support funds to the custodial parent. Don't you think that this is probably a much more efficient way of dealing with the problems that men face when it comes to reproduction in particular, but also in a broader sense, approach every problem that men face? Because inevitably, men and women are going to get together and they're going to reproduce. This is what's going to happen. So, like, if you could, tell me why your focus is more on the former than the latter, and how you feel about the latter as far as, like, equalizing the laws as far as reproduction and child rearing are concerned.
Well, actually, I think the fact that, you know, I'm probably the only one who's actually brought up this issue about the artificial womb. People are mistaking that for me being against, you know, all the remedies that you mentioned. I'm actually for all of those things, actually. My only concern is this. Of course, the male pill is an extension of divesting women from the monopoly on reproduction that they have. And the artificial womb is just something that in the very distant future, 50 or 60 or maybe even 100 years from now, this is something that's going to come. I mean, it's not something that whether or not you or I or anybody else morally objects to, it's not going to halt the progress, the crawl of technology. So with the artificial womb, I think that's something that's going to come in the very distant future. In regards to changing laws in the near future, I'm in complete support of that. I actually support both methods. As far as the laws go, my only concern is this. There was a time, of course, before feminism hit in the U.S. at least, where the laws weren't this way, you know. And my only concern is that the fact that they weren't this way, and in the span of what, a decade, they became this way, probably two or three decades to be fair. What's to stop it from in the future again becoming that way? I mean, this is something that I think arises out of when you see successful patriarchies like Western civilization arise. You see the explosive growth in the beginning, and then you get this massive acquirement of wealth and resources and so on and so forth. And this type of growth in the patriarchy, in a patriarchal civilization, in a successful one, will inevitably lead to government largesse and feminism and so on and so forth. So I think what has to be addressed is if the laws were changed to become this way, it can be changed to become that way again, you know. And so I'm, as far as the artificial womb goes, I'm just looking ahead and making my predictions I'll probably be dead and gone before it even gets here, you know. But this is just my prediction and what I think is going to happen in the advent of such a technology. Just like with the male birth control pill, it's just going to be a hit, you know, on the monopoly of female reproduction. That's the way I'm seeing it. I'm seeing it as, from a tactician standpoint. I want it to be. I'm not worried really about the relationship between men and women anymore. That's something that feminism, the state, and women and men will have to sort out eventually. But from just a tactitionary standpoint, this is what I see as one of the ultimate ways to gain power. I mean, it's all a power grab, this gender war thing that's going on. It's a power grab in a constant war between the sexes. I don't even want to use the term war, but a constant power struggle. And that's just the way I see it as far as, you know, will it end? How will it end? I think the artificial womb will decisively end that conflict that always exists between the genders.
So you're not worried about, with the increase of state power, that the state might end up driving the wedge even further between men and women with the advent of the artificial womb, just so they can...
I could be wrong on this, but I believe it was one of the founding fathers, Thomas Jefferson maybe, that said that the people get the state they deserve. You know, it's up to the people to control the state, and if they allow the state to get this runaway power, it's only a matter of time before they're going to abuse that power. I mean, once again, this is something that's going to occur 60, 70, 100 years from now. So, again, I have no control over whether or not the state is going to commandeer this technology for nefarious purposes. But you know, I can speculate on the ramifications it's going to have on gender, which I'm admittedly a lot more educated on as opposed to how the state functions in concert with its people. The possibility exists, just like the possibility for nuclear annihilation existed before we developed the atomic bomb. But that didn't stop the development of such technology. And I think the atomic bomb is a hell of a lot more dangerous, considering that by definition it can bring about the extinction of the human race. So with technologies such as this, there's always going to be profound risk and also profound possibilities. I'm just speculating on that. In the more immediate sense, absolutely, I want there to be complete separation of marriage and state, and complete shared custody, complete equal distribution of rights between men and women as far as custody of children goes and marriage goes.
Oh, very interesting.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Should we take some callers, James?
Actually, yeah.
Okay. The gentleman called it before? He called back. I can't remember his name.
Yeah, we've got Toe Gunner from the Spearhead on the line. Toe Gunner, you're live.
Barbarossa, what's up, man?
How you doing, Toe Gunner?
I'm really well, man. I just wanted to say I appreciate all your videos. You're doing a really great job.
Thank you, man. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I keep on coming in and out for whatever reason. These fellows probably told you I've called about a million times. All I heard was like marriage 2.0. So I don't know if I'm on topic or off.
No, I can hear you fine. I can hear you fine.
Can I make a general comment, I guess, get fellas, and also get Bob Rosa's opinion on it, too?
Go ahead.
Look, I'm a big, my thesis here, when folks get really bewildered about the current status of things, my explanation is to just look at the very obvious relationship between the rise of feminism and then also the power of the state and the rise of the state. So, you know, Barbarossa and the other fellows, if you guys are familiar with this, is the comments I usually leave on Spearhead. You know that I'm, my position is basically that's our problem. If we lobby for reducing the size of the state, ergo, so will you reduce the size of feminism.
I'm in complete agreement with that. I mean, I agree that the state is a main proponent of the rise of feminism, although it's perennial, I think, and I think factors contribute to it other than the state, but without the state, it cannot function. That's absolutely correct, yeah.
I want to say something. Go ahead.
Looks like we lost Toe Gunner.
Oh, no. Got to be kidding me. What's wrong?
I guess he's having problems hooking in.
Hopefully he'll call back.
Is he Skyping in or what?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay. No. Well, I have something to say, like in regards to what Toe Gunner just said. Aaron Pizzi said something really pertinent to what Toe Gunner's talking about here in one of Man Woman's Myths videos. She said that that a man with a family will always be loyal to the mother of his children before he's loyal to anybody else, and that includes the state. And that's a threat to state power. Mm-hmm. Feminism's stated purpose from the very beginning was to destroy the family. There's no doubt about that. There's no doubt about that. And as John the Other has said, and a few others have said many times before, is that feminism is a tool used by the state to basically turn men into, and you said this in your speech last week, James, is it's basically being used as a tool to turn men into cattle. And if you think that there aren't people in power right now that don't see, if you think that there are not people in power now that see people or humanity in general as basically chattel, you're dreaming, you know. And this is just patently obvious to anybody who's taken the red pill that this is what's going on. This is a very widely held belief amongst MRAs that feminism and the state work in concert with each other, because it's very mutually beneficial to both of them.
I will tell you, part of my required reading lists, if anyone's listening and they have not yet read the Red Stockings Manifesto, shame on you. Shame on you. After this show, if you have not read the Red Stockings Manifesto, you need to go read it, because this is feminism in a nutshell. This manifesto was written back in, the late 60s, early 70s. And it embodies everything that feminism is today, absolutely everything. Go read it if you haven't done so.
I'm going to put a link up in the chat room. So.
Yeah, good idea. Let's get some education.
Is it all right if is it okay if I throw in my own little recommendation there?
Absolutely.
I mean, I'm sure many have already read this, but Esther Villiers, The Manipulated Man, is an excellent read. I think people should definitely check that out.
Brilliant book. She is a true genius. It is one of my favorite books. It's truly a great book.
And the best part
is
it's written by a woman. So can't really call her.
It's funny, people. Esther Villar truly was. I mean, it's hard to defend the idea that everybody in the men's rights movement is a true misogynist. That's just not true. But Esther Villar, she was a misogynist, man.
She really said,
"Hey, listen, this is what it's all about." And women have been seething in anger at her ever since she wrote that book. And seriously, that book should be required high school reading for every male.
If anybody male within this movement were to write that book or make a video about it or whatever, oh my God, you know.
They'd send in the Marines.
Yeah.
They would,
you know,
I mean, seriously.
Say, let's just say.
Forget the SPLC, the government would get involved.
It would be interesting.
It's brilliant.
Hey guys,
book.
We do have another caller here. And with that, I'm going to bring Matt onto the air. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yes, hello?
Yeah.
Okay, yes, yes. Yeah, I just wanted to say to Bob Roaster, I'm a huge fan as well. And I remember when I first found out, I first seen your first video entitled, I think, Men Are Opting Out, or Men Realize We're Being Duped and Are Opting Out. I mean, I just wanted to jump for joy, man. I mean, I realized that there's somebody out there that also sees what I see. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Well, I think it's great that, you know, that's actually one of my highest view videos. But, you know, I really enjoy when I can hear people, you know, it's really weird to actually hear people, you know, their voice instead of a YouTube message telling me, you know, that they appreciate somebody else speaking out about it. And I want to urge everybody else to do the same. I mean, I think that we're on the cusp of something big, and there's going to be exponential growth in the men's movement in the near future, I believe, at least.
Yeah,
there's every reason to believe that. Go ahead, Connor.
Right.
Sorry about that.
Definitely. No problem. But yeah, man. Also, man, I had a nickname for you. I called you the Malcolm X of the men's rights movement, man, because I kind of I gave you that nickname because of your delivery and how powerful you deliver your message. But anyway, I had a question about something else you had said a while back about like welding and other kind of trades and math and sciences. I just wanted you to touch on some of those trades that you think one can get into to secure, like, the demand, like if you can give me the short list.
Well, I remember before I actually started going to school, I was actually working in a machine shop, and, you know, there were other people my age, and I think I was about 22 at the time, and other men my age, and, you know, they would get their breaks and they would just joke around and all that kind of stuff. But I was friends with the welder, and I would go back on my break, and I would force him. You know, sometimes I would even pay him to teach me how to trig weld. And I think these are the type of things that are incredibly important for young men to develop. I mean, you have to develop a skill because, well, you know, the odds are stacked against you with affirmative action for women. All sorts of trades are useful for men. Plumbing, electrician, you know, this was something that it was instilled into me by my father, who was who started out, you know, in the Dominican Republic, and he was poor, you know, and he grew up on a farm and all that, and he came here to the United States, became an electrical mechanical engineer, and he instilled in me, you know, you have to develop a skill. And unfortunately, a lot of young boys, considering that what is it now, 45% of children are born out of wedlock or to single mothers, a lot of them don't have that father figure to direct them to the trades or to engineering. You know, make sure your children, your boys specifically, are proficient in calculus, physics. These things are incredibly important, because the only worth that a man can extract from the society these days, of course, we all know, is in his utility. So if he's not proficient in some sort of skill, and it doesn't have to be anything as advanced as calculus, but teach him how to weld, you know, not just arc weld, but trig weld, teach him something that he can bring to an employer, or not even bring to an employer, teach him something that allows him to build something, even if he's on his own. You know, I think that's incredibly important because, of course, there's no STEM benefits for young boys. So it's of utmost importance that you instill these lessons into your young boys and any fathers listening.
Oh, okay, most definitely. And also, I just wanted to ask, where exactly do you see the men's movement 1 year from now, just to give your opinion on it?
This is something that is that's a good question. I see it making significant strides, but at the same time, this is one of my concerns. As it moves into the mainstream, it's going to have to shed some of its more extreme rhetoric, and I'm fine with that, and I'm fine with that, knowing that some of my videos are definitely on the extreme side. But I'm just concerned that it doesn't lose its core, what made it great, because it's going to have to make some concessions to you know, the PC groups that are the dominant narrative today. So I think that It's going to be real interesting within the next year to see the inevitable concessions that it might have to make as it vies for legitimacy within the mainstream. That's something that's hard to predict, and I can't really expand further on it without giving it more consideration, really.
Right. Okay, well, I appreciate it. I'm not going to stay on too much longer. I'm sure there's other callers who want to talk to you and things like that. So just thanks for the opportunity to talk to you, but I'm going to get off now.
I appreciate the call.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Matt.
Thanks for calling.
All right.
And we are going to be bringing up our next caller, Crazy316. Welcome to the show, Crazy.
How's it going, guys?
Welcome back, Crazy.
How you doing, man?
Oh, chilling. Love the articulance you bring in your videos. It's so refreshing to listen to.
I appreciate all of my subscribers.
I just had one little question. With the introduction of the male pill, which threatens women's monopoly on reproduction, as you put it, do you think feminists will be a strong opposition to the artificial womb, because that also may threaten their monopoly on reproduction? Or do you think they will embrace it?
Absolutely. I mean, they're going to oppose this with a force that I mean, you think it's bad now. I mean, they're going to. As soon as the male pill starts to become a reality, you're going to see an explosion of feminist activity. It's going to be unrivaled in size and scope. It's that profound. It's that profound. The male pill is something that I think that the men's rights movement should be pursuing. It's almost. I'm going to shy away from saying that it's of utmost importance, but it's just so incredibly profound. What it's going to do is revolutionize the way men and women interact, I think. For the first time in history, men are going to have a say in when they become a father, how they become a father. We see this this narrative within the mainstream media that men are too dumb to remember to take it. Well, we'll see about that.
Or they would lie about it, or they wouldn't use it properly. As if women
knew
those things.
Because there's just hordes of men that want to be forced into premature fatherhood.
Sure,
I'll tell you this.
It's complete nonsense.
That brings up the idea we talked about last week, too, when it came to Tennessee, where over 50% of the tests, the DNA testings, were the father or the man that was claimed to be the father wasn't even the father. And
absolutely.
There was a law that was trying to be made in order to force DNA testing to be made to prove that the man is the actual father, and the Tennessee Women's Caucus or whatever successfully defeated that law. And
they actually
a law that would help men comes into place, women always jump up and immediately try to defeat it.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, that wasn't me. Go ahead.
Okay. If I could just interject here, this is how I see it. Basically, having a man's child or naming a man as the father, whatever the case might be, has always been, since the dawn of civilization, this really is kind of what civilization is based on when you really sit down and think about it, naming a man as a father or making him a father has always been the way that women get resources from men.
Yeah.
Always. Now, anciently, and up until pretty recently, actually, I should say anciently, but it's not true, a woman had to do something to make it worth a man's while to take on the role of father of her child. Before we had reproductive rights, before we had these crazy child support laws, which are completely exploitative of men, a woman had to approach a guy and say, hey, listen, I'll make it worth your while if you take care of the bills and put a roof over my head and I'll have your baby. And, it's going to be your baby. It's not going to be anybody else. Women had to do that at some point. Now women don't have to do that anymore because of the way the laws are and the way women have taken total control of not just their own reproduction, but the reproduction of men as well. The pill, the male reproductive control, fertility control, threatens this to its core. The idea, and this isn't just feminists. I really believe, and you know, I'm going to generalize all women here. I think that's useful to do so in this respect. But I really believe that the idea that a woman might actually have to sit down with a man face to face, toe to toe, as an equal, and negotiate parenthood with him is something that frightens most women. The idea that a man can take the bill of control of fertility and say to the woman, "Hey, listen, I'm going to decide when I become a father." And with whom I'm going to become a father, and under what conditions I become a father. This is something that truly, I think, for many women, if not most women, because I've asked young women this of childbearing age, this, you know, if I'm out at a bar or like, you know, work or something, I ask them, "What do you think about male fertility control?" And the majority of them, hands down, are like, "Oh, are you kidding? No way!" And I ask, and I say, "Well, why do you have a problem with this?" And they always come up with the same thing. It's always, "Oh, they'll forget, they'll lie about it." I'm like, "Wait a minute, women do that stuff all the time. And don't you think it's kind of absurd to think that a guy would lie about such a thing like that when he could go to jail if he fails to pay a child support payment?" I mean, really, women won't say this, but I really do believe that women in general know they have this complete monopoly over not just their own reproduction, but a man's resources once she becomes pregnant by a man. That the idea that they would actually have to negotiate that is something that frightens them, because women are, and this is true, women are incredibly dependent on the resources that men bring them. It's just part of their nature. It's not good or not bad. This is what it is. Sure, go ahead.
Yeah.
I was gonna bring up the point as far as the male reproductive pill. This is not just a threat to women. It's a threat to private corporate interests, and it's a threat to the government as well, because you're going to look at a big population reduction all of a sudden, and less money moving from the hands of the state into women, which would normally justify the state's continued growth and bureaucracy. It would literally collapse the whole darn system. One of the reasons why I look at MTOW on a political level, not just on a personal level.
Barbarossa, you got anything to say about that?
Yeah.
Well, I think it's an understatement to say that women are incredibly dependent. I think they're entirely dependent. I mean, except for the very few women that actually carry their own weight and work for a living and don't depend on any kind of government assistance or any kind of man to furnish their lifestyle. This is going to have such a dramatic, almost a thunderclap effect. And people, I'm in agreement. People are going to be panicking. Corporations are going to be up in arms about it, because let's face it, it's less blood for the machine. It's going to radically shift the way men are treated, men to a degree, of course, because there always will be still the desire for sex and all that kind of stuff. Women will retain their sexual allure, but the male pill is going to make it so that it's going to effectively cripple the male to female wealth transfer that Western civilization is built upon. It's going to be I'm very excited about it. I should say that.
I can almost guarantee you that the FDA will not approve it. There will be tons of backroom deals done to keep the approval of a male pill from ever reaching the U.S. markets.
If I can just make one more point.
I think that we need to pay attention to the reaction, because when people discuss the male pill or even the artificial womb, I mean, you get these reactions like, "Oh, this is anti-family, this is against the nuclear family, this and that." But, we've had about 60 years of anti-family behavior on the part of women in the state. So I think that, it's about time that, we let this notion go that any sort of outreach from men for reproductive rights or control over fertility is some kind of attack on the family. It's not, and the family has been being attacked by the state and women for a very long time now.
It's actually, I believe that it will make families stronger. If we had a male pill and we made it, or some kind of male fertility control method, it would be basically requiring women to sit down, like I said, toe-to-toe, face-to-face as an equal with their men folk if they want them to take on the role of father is going to basically put fathers or fathers-to-be at a much better bargaining level than they ever had before. And, of course, you know, what guy doesn't want his kids living under his own roof with him? And that's going to be a major – it's going to strengthen families. It's going to be the biggest family-strengthening thing ever. So, I mean, the out-of-wedlock birth rate would drop like a rock. Because what's every guy's worst nightmare? Having a kid out of wedlock and he has no rights over this kid and he's nothing more than a sperm donor turned ATM machine.
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with that. I mean, I think people say that, you know, it's anti-family, this, that, but it's actually pro-family because nobody –
very pro-family.
Yeah, nobody's going to be forced into this decision. Nobody's going to be forced into fatherhood. Nobody's going to be forced into motherhood. It's just going to be a man and a woman coming together on equal terms where both share the same amount of power. And so, you know, they will be forced. What I want to stress, I mean, if there's anything that I want to stress more than anything, with my YouTube channel and all the things that I'm doing, is that I want men and women to be looked at as equals in society to the point where, you know, no privilege and equal responsibility for both. I don't want to tell women what to do. I don't want to control women. I certainly don't hate women. That's another one of the lies that's been thrown at my channel, but I certainly don't hate women. You know, I just want to see men and women equal. At the end of the day, that's how I want it to be. And the pill is certainly going to be a major step in that direction.
Cool. That was the only question I had then.
Well, we appreciate you calling in, Crazy. And we will be bringing on our next caller. Our next caller is Rick. Rick, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for letting me on. I guess my biggest question or my biggest circumstance is that I would like to develop myself into more of a voice for the men's rights movement, and especially for men going their own way. My circumstance in this is the fact that I have lived my life going my own way. I'm retired. I have a reasonably nice sailboat, and I have a website which I'm giving problems to. I think I'd have to say that. My biggest question for you, Bob Barasa, and for all of you, might be, how can I maintain the fire? Because I feel like the fire is going out in my heart. I feel a level of apathy at this point, but they've all heard this. There are better people. There are more eloquent speakers for the men's rights movement. And what can I do about this? Because I really feel like maybe the best I can do for the world or the best I can do for my brothers, meaning my brothers across the world, is to try to be at least one more effective voice in the chorus.
When you say, if I can answer real quick, when you say that you're feeling the fire subside, I mean, could you just clarify that for me a little bit? Because I was having a little bit of trouble understanding what you meant by that.
Well, I think I could say that I was pretty fiery during my first few weeks, my first couple of months, running my own website.
Mm-hmm.
I
think I'm starting to understand what you're saying now. You know, whenever you get into a movement like this, there's this, I don't know if you would call it a courtship phase, where you're just, you know, extremely excited to be a part of this, and extremely excited to be a part of other men speaking out against this. And of course, you know, after a while, and I've been making videos for, I'd say, almost 4 years, after a while, you know, of course, you know, there's only so much that you can say and do. So my advice is make a significant contribution to the point where you feel that you have done right, by this movement. That's what I aim to do. I mean, I think at this point, you know, I've said a lot of what I had to say already, and I still have some more things to say, but, you know, I think that I've made a significant contribution, and when you feel that you've made a contribution that is sufficient to you, that's when, you know, you can kind of just be an observer from that point and kind of just watch civilization unravel as a man going his own way. There's going to be, you know, a lot as a man going his own way, a lot of it is just patience. You know, you just observe. That's what I do, at least. I think certainly there's going to be an explosion of creativity that you have and an explosion of ideas that you want to share, and then it's going to taper off. This is just how these things happen.
Mm-hmm. I have something to say about that. It's really easy because this movement we have going, this men's rights movement, number one, it's in its infancy. Number two, we are up against so much more than any other civil rights movement. And this is civil rights we're talking about. We're talking about a human rights movement that we are involved in here. So let's not make no bones about it. That's what's going on. There's never been a movement like ours that's had more opposition to it in a broader sense, both social, political, and governmental, than the men's rights movement has. It's immense what we're up against. It's easy to get burnt out very soon because it's overwhelming. And I, having done a little bit of lobbying work on Capitol Hill and, of course, writing and now being the news director for Voice for Men and doing what I can, I've only found reason to be really encouraged only in the past year, really, even though I've only been at this for 3 years, simply for no reason than just the fact that our movement's growing. But if I were you and you wanted to, because, you know, and I think men are like this, men need kind of instant gratification when they build something. They just need to know that what they're doing is making a difference. They need a more instant gratification in that respect than women do, I think. And maybe this makes us an effective activist, one of the many reasons it makes us an effective activist, especially when we're advocating for our own interests. But I think what you should do is kind of look what's going on around you locally. Do you have any children at all?
I have no children. I actually have something that's a little bit unusual because I gave my attention and my concern and my consideration to my mother's well-being.
Right.
My mom raised me without a father in the late 1950s and early 1960s. So I've got kind of a rougher perspective about this. And during the 1970s, 80s, 90s, I was more involved with taking care of my mom and making sure that she had a good life than I was with looking after my own interests. So when mom died in 2002, I was 48 years old, and I knew that I was way, way, way beyond any possibility of starting a family, which sort of hurts in some cases, but not too much because I realized just how much of a bullet I dodged. As a matter of fact, I look at it and I say, I tap danced across a minefield in the 80s and 90s.
Oh, yeah.
But there's still this thing. Is there more that I can say? Is there more that my voice can add to the chorus to help?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'll tell you
there's always something you can do.
Here's a model I work by. All right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I first got started, I set up my own blog. Within about a week, didn't have anything else to add to it. The whole idea of the blog was basically just a starter for anyone who might be interested, and some ideas about what to do with teamwork and what type of qualities you might want to look into building inside yourself to become an effective men's rights activist. As soon as that was done, that was it. I had nothing else to say. I started looking around and I saw all these wonderful voices everywhere, and I was like, oh my God, I'll never be able to compete with what these guys are doing. So I did my own thing. Started becoming much more active elsewhere, and rather than having to put my own voice out there on the line, which, ironic, that's what I'm doing today, I started building teams and started asking people to take a look into other forms of activism that we could be doing. Things on the ground or things online. If somebody wants to tackle a particular issue online, that's great. Do it with a team. If you want to hold a picket up in the middle of town, do it with a team. And why we are only relegating our activist efforts to this passive technology that we're using here to communicate with is beyond me. We have so many models out there that we could be implementing to actually put our feet on the ground and make our voices heard that way. I tell you what, it's sure as hell easy for the police to ignore us online, but it sure isn't easy for the police and the media to ignore us whenever we've got our feet on the ground. So if you want, start looking into things like that. Start talking to people who you know personally, rather than talking to strangers online. Go up to people who are half your age and say, "You, hey, come here, let me talk to you." And actually,
yeah, it's
talk
very
to
important.
These people face to face.
Yeah, I see where your point there. Yeah, that makes a lot of good sense. And you know, there is a certain sadness in my mind that we didn't go through with the protest at the Titanic Memorial, which happens to be in my hometown or in my greater hometown, Washington, D.C. But
Chris,
do you
live in the D.C. area, Carl? Or you live
I do
you live
indeed.
In the D.C. area? Well, I live in Alexandria, Virginia. We should get together and have a beer sometime. Yeah.
Oh, that'd be cool. I live up in Rockville, Maryland.
Oh, cool. Yes, yeah, great. Not far
mm-hmm.
away.
Yeah,
a big thing that I was going to say, you got to network with people and you got to dive in. The two things you got
to
do.
I need to find out who these people are and how I can become a part of it. My biggest thing, is going my own way. As a matter of fact, my website's about that, and my interest happens to be in the notion of maybe I'll sail beyond the sunset one of these days. But meanwhile, it's not yet. And what I want to do is try to get some more attention. As I said, become a member of the chorus. I realize that I don't have, I'm a croaking crow over here in the corner, but maybe my extra word will help some people. I had a rather startling thing, actually, this weekend. Somebody who came to the Annapolis Spring Sail Boat Show, Spring Sails, S-A-I-L-S, Boat Show, said, "Hey, they followed my blog," which at the same time pleased the heck out of me and left me feeling a bit worried because she told me I rant a lot. And she's right, of course.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah, I'll tell you, when you're faced with the reality of the situation, it really comes down to building your personal connections and then building a team to decide what to do next. It doesn't mm-hmm. take a whole lot to make everything work out for you.
And you don't have to be 100% all the time. This is true of me. I think everybody's ever done any activism work, whether it's MRA stuff or whatever. You're going to have ebb and flows depending on what's going on in your life. There are going to be times where you don't care as much as other times, depending on what's happening with you and what's happening in the movement. But the key thing is just keep at it. Well, whatever it is you do, keep on doing it and do the different things as the time comes up. Being an MRA is just as much an identity as anything else, I think.
Well, thank you. This leaves me not feeling near as disheartened as I have for the last few days. It's like, hey,
great.
okay, this is a chance for me to maybe chill a little bit, maybe sit back and observe what's going on, and I hope I can be more effective. And hey, listen, if anyone's in the Washington, D.C. area, I'd love to find out about it. I'd love to hear from anybody. After reading what Dr. F. and Karma MGW Mikto had to say about their circumstances, you know, meeting up with a few other people, it's like, gee, if we could do this in the Washington, D.C. area, it would be very, very cool.
Why don't you email me at avfm_news@yahoo.com. You'll see my email address in one of my articles down at the bottom in my the short little bio thing I got there. Why don't you email me? We'll get together and do something. I know a couple people in the area that we can get together with, and it's always nice to meet other MRAs face to face. It's a rare pleasure to do so. So definitely get in touch.
That's AVFMNEWS. Is that just like one word?
No, that's VFM_news.
@Victor_November_Echo_Whiskey_Sierra@Yahoo.com.
@Yahoo.com. Underscore. Just VFM Victor Foxtrot Mother _ News. NEWS @Yahoo.com.
Yeah, my
hey, give me a shout.
Will do. My use of the ICAO alphabet is obviously an artifact of my having been a pilot for many of these years. Now I'm a sailor and ready to sail beyond the sunset.
Wonderful.
I'll send
Rick.
Real quick. Thanks ever much, so much, and you all.
Sure,
have
absolutely,
good...
Rick.
Oh,
yeah, thanks
thanks
for calling. We got to go to a tour. Okay, great. Thanks a lot for calling. We got to go to the next caller. And we got Toe Gunner on again, James. Do we want to get him on here again?
Yeah. I just want to add that that guys, that's activism in action. When you make a reach out to personally get together with other MRAs and sit down and actually get to know each other, that's part of the effort. That's something that we all need to do. All right. And we're going to bring Toe Gunner back on. Toe Gunner, welcome back.
Hey, man, sorry about everything. You guys are absolutely right. My question is how do we organize this on a regional basis? Because it sort of seemed like happenstance. What is it, James? And that other fella just lived closely in Washington, D.C. But, you know, I almost wanted to chime in during that previous conversation. The fellow's like, what should I be doing? Shoot, develop a website specifically. I guess the word is matchmaking, but so that on a regional basis we can empower this activism to start to take hold. We can actually say, hey, here's a forum. Because, like, I haven't been to some of these web pages you guys have mentioned, but I usually go to, like, the Spearhead, Paul's site, and everything like that. And it's all great and everything, but in terms of, like, getting to the rubber meets the road activism, we're going to need to utilize and leverage sites that are going to make life easy for us, you know. So, for instance, like for me, I'm up in the Boston area. I have no idea whether or not there's an audience. Well, I do know a few people, but, you know, we should take advantage of the Internet and the anonymous nature that it affords us. So, you know, people can come out, because I need to tell you guys, we're demonized and we're on the defensive.
Yeah,
I'll stop right there. What do you think about that idea?
I think it's a great idea, and actually I'm glad that we're talking about this now, because I think that you're absolutely right. Because it's one thing, because we are, by and large, an online movement. That's where, up till now, everything's been happening. And it's probably going to be predominantly an online movement forever. But there really is no reason why, and I'm derelict in this as well, but there really is no reason why we cannot have regional networking things where, like, you know, maybe we're up where you live or where I live here in D.C., we can't, like, once a month just have a group of guys get together and, you know, maybe have dinner or something like that, or just be in someone's backyard and have a barbecue and just talk and just basically get to know each other. Because, you know, emailing people is fine and calling in on online radio shows is great. It's wonderful. We need to do it. But there's nothing really substitutes getting together with somebody and just talking to her, like, if you need something or if something's happening, it's just a matter of getting on the phone and saying, hey, Bob, or hey, Toe Gunner, can you make it to this lobbying event? Or there's this anti-circumcision demonstration going on in D.C. Let's get some guys together and go down there and say something about it, and let's identify ourselves as men's rights activists and try to get in touch with the local press. I think this is an exciting idea, and I think that this could do something. This could mean something.
What do you think, James?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we need to start networking on a regional level. I'm pretty lucky as far as where I live that there's a whole bunch of MGTOW floating around that I've been fortunate enough to actually meet and talk to. But for the most part, they aren't activists in their efforts at all. So actually coming across other MRAs is kind of difficult, but I mean, hell, I'm based out of Dallas, and it's just a couple hours between myself and Paul Elam, building regional networks is going to be the way that we begin to tackle things like state legislation. In fact, it's the only way you're going to be able to tackle things like state legislation.
Yeah, it would be great. Like, what's going on in New Jersey with the paternity fraud thing is a classic example of this. There's a whole bunch of women's groups over there right now. They're on their feet right now over there, lobbying to get this paternity testing initiative defeated. There really should be some MRAs out there on the ground making some noise, so somebody from the press can come and stick a camera in their face and say, "Hey, listen," and have these guys say, "Hey, listen, this is wrong. We throw men in jail for failure to pay child support. Shouldn't we make sure that the guys who are in jail are actually the real biological fathers, at least? I mean, what is this business where men are basically slaves to whomever names them as the father of their child?" I mean, that's just one example. And while I think that online activism has been good up until now in getting things to coagulate, and there's been a marked amount of success, especially in the case of Mary Kellett, I think is a good example of this, and there are many others. At some point, we got to get in people's faces personally, and local legislatures are where this movement is going to make its change. There's no way, because we can't just go up to the federal government and change things. I really think that on a state by state basis, or county by county basis, in the U.S. at least, this is where real change is going to be taking place. There's no other way to do it.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I would, though, point out that, the Arab Spring, they keep on talking about how social media was such an energizing component. So to the extent, obviously feet in the ground is exactly what we need to be doing. But let's not forget the exponential power that's in our hands right now. And another thing, too, I have a theory that, certainly we got nothing to lose. So stress testing this apparatus could be kind of interesting because, listening to Byrne and everything of late talk about some of the actual MRE publicity and the reaction that we've seen, and I think you guys touched on it earlier on the show, they've really stepped up their narrative, and the recent advertisements are ridiculously mishandled, for instance. But what I mean to say is that when we start this thing going, and James, I think you said it, it's a real house of cards, guys. And if you're curious to see how much, how callous it's become literally over the years, so that's the only thing that's going to stand it up. Like, for instance, with this whole jazz about Augusta, Georgia, and everything like that, if we were organized, we could have rebutted that argument effectively. Should have done immediately, which it basically was done anyway, but we could have just said, "Hey, look, you want to let them in? Okay. Curves and everything else that's out there, to include all the taxpayer, female only, let them all in, let us in as well." And it neutralizes the argument altogether. So, anyway, I'm just pointing that out as weak points in their whole ideology, if you ask me, is extremely weak. So,
it's not ideology.
Well, of course, yeah. But I'm just curious to see if we curve this thing up, because we've talked to Dick. It's going to expose real fractures in there, in this house of cards. I'm curious to see how they react. I'm curious to see how quickly it falls, frankly, because we're so far off the mean. I'm I'm a big believer in prevention. when you get this far off the edge, it's going to come crashing back in. I guarantee you,
if we get feet on the ground, that their response will play directly into our hands.
Oh, yeah.
I can promise you that if we get feet on the ground, the way that they're going to raise their stink, what with their little slut walks and their little war on women rhetoric and things like that, are going to absolutely expose them.
For what they are.
For what they are. They are scared to death of the idea that that we're online, much less the fact that we might actually decide to get ourselves active inside of our own community. So they do not want that. They will do everything in their power to shut us up. They've tried so far. But I'll tell you, once we start exercising our First Amendment rights in the public sector, in the streets, there will be no stopping the snowball. No, there won't be. The media cannot ignore 500 men walking down a road holding signs. They cannot ignore it.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Is Barbarossa still on, actually?
Yeah. No, I'm just listening in. I mean, I'm in complete agreement. When this finally starts spilling onto the streets, it's going to be spectacular, and I can't wait to see it personally. Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with that.
That's what this is about, guys. News and activism.
Yeah, it's about activism. It's about making news as much as it is about reporting the news.
I want to see. I'm predicting there's going to be a good amount of vitriol coming from feminists. I just want to see some of the face-to-face confrontations that are going to go down. And, you know, I think that one of the important things is that we document this with video cameras when we finally do go out into the streets, because, you know, I know this might sound like over exaggeration, but one of these feminists might try to, you know, hit one of these. I mean, it will be vicious.
I think
that
happened.
That's already happened. You already saw what happened.
It has.
Justice.
Yep.
Did you see that video?
They will try to physically attack you, and it needs to be documented that they were hit first. You know, and because you know how that goes when a woman says, you know, anytime she says, a man touched her the wrong way, we all know who's going to jail. But if it's on video camera, there's absolutely
and they will
nothing
use it,
to do about that.
They will use that as a weapon against us. They will do that.
The media, the mass media will use that as a weapon, which is why I must stress that we stick by principles of nonviolence and non-aggression.
Good point.
It does not mean that you don't have the right to defend yourself, but unfortunately, you need to be aware that if you do defend yourself, that the media will cut out the part where you got hit first.
Oh, sure, absolutely, it will be able to happen automatically.
Yeah, I mean, we saw with Ryan McIntosh what happened there. You know, I mean, everything was caught on video, and the media played that one snippet where only he was defending himself, you know. But that part where she came and hopped the counter and smacked him, of course, you know, that wasn't played over and over and over on, what was it, CNN or, you know, whatever news outlet was broadcasting it. They will selectively air what went down.
It was because of men's rights activists who had footage on their YouTube channels and everywhere on the internet that got that guy's charges dropped. I mean, that guy was fixing to go back to jail for a while. And if there hadn't been people willing to say, "Hey, look at this footage," the guy would have we'd be rotting in jail right now. He'd probably be in jail for another 15 years. I mean, you know, but that's a classic example of the power of using footage and bypassing the press's shrinking monopoly on the public perception. which they have misused terribly, especially in regards to feminism and men's rights.
Absolutely, and I will tell you this, guys. There is a huge directory being set up right now. It's called the Men's Rights Directory. It's pretty much the one-stop shop for anything men's rights related. The guys who set it up really, really need help getting all the articles together from all the sources. So if you have that, then go in and do it. When we start hitting the streets, this video footage needs to be uploaded in several venues, okay? Not just YouTube, but other places as well, and private copies need to be dispersed to other MRAs via whatever channels you have. So that way, if shit goes down, everybody and their mama can come out with a real deal and say, look, the mainstream media is full of shit, and so are these feminists that started the fight. All right?
Mm-hmm. If I can just real quick mention just my personal prediction of what's going to happen, and I'm sure you guys have come to the same conclusion, but, you know, be ready for an eventual tie to some kind of extremist organization here in the United States, whether it be, you know, they're going to try to say that we're all, you know, and it's crazy that I'm a Hispanic man saying this, but they're going to try to say that we're all white supremacists, we're tied to that. They're going to try to say that we're tied to, radical extreme patriot movements, all that kind of stuff. They're going to try to link us. And you saw with the SPLC what they've tried to do with the hate group classification. It's only a matter of time before the vilification process begins. And so we have to be diligent about that. It's going to come. And I just want to warn people about that. You know, it's almost a certainty at this point. It's already happened.
Absolutely. And yeah. I will say this: as we gain power, as a presence in the mass consciousness of our respective countries, there are going to be political parties that try to co-opt us, and we cannot allow that to happen. Because the moment a political party starts to co-opt, what it is that we do is the moment they begin to try to turn it towards statist intervention. Once again, making it no different than what than feminism.
Exactly. And if I might just add, you guys are talking about seeing progress here on the comment sections of many different blogs. I went ahead, and I wasn't trying to speak for everybody, excuse me, but such as the way things are, posted something on American Thinker. And the way I put it is to say, look, like, we're not here to be – the MRA is not here to be in the now sense. We're not here to be another pathetic, aggrieved group with our hand out and on their knees. That's how I see it.
No, the whole idea is with combination with MTOW to literally reduce the whole damn thing back to the lowest common denominator. And when we do that, well, you know, everybody has personal accountability and personal responsibility. Doesn't matter if you've got dangly bits between your legs or not.
I think that if I could just add, you know, there's going to be you talk about co-opting and the chances that our movement is going to that you know other people are going to seek to divert, and you know I just think it's incredibly important that the men's movement understands that it's about the rights of men, and women of course, but you know, we address men's issues. And I think it's we should be unapologetic in addressing men's issues, just like, when interest groups try to seep their way in and dig their claws and co-op, I think it's something that we have to watch out for, because we're gonna have groups from the right and the left of the political spectrum trying to essentially get in on the action and try to direct our narrative. You know, there's going to be people that are trying to classify us as homophobes. There's going to be people that there's going to be a big push from the social conservatives on the right side of the spectrum that are going to try to classify this as a return to traditionalism and that kind of stuff, where the man is just reduced back to his basic protective provider role. I think we have to be very, very careful about that kind of stuff, you know, because I just don't want to see it devolve back into, you know, the interest of everybody else but men. You know, you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Well, on that note, I think we are about ready to close up shop here at AVFM News and Activism. Barbarossa, I really appreciate you calling in. We've really enjoyed this interview. This is one of the best interviews I think we've ever had, actually.
Yeah, I think we need to invite Barbarossa back on the show again.
Was I able to answer your questions well enough? For, I mean, this is my first
interview.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah. So. Oh, yeah.
All
man,
right,
everything,
great,
went, everything went smooth as cake. I will tell you, we're having a little after-show party, and I'm throwing the link in here.
Are you guys still going to be up on the Blog Talk Radio, the messaging board that you guys have there?
We've got a stick cam group, and I'm throwing the link in there again, that we occasionally go to and have a little after-show party there. And we invite anyone who's been approved by Paul Elam already to come in. If you have not, then you need to sign up for an account with StickCam. Paul Elam will eventually approve you, at which point you guys can start coming to the after-show parties on a regular basis. All right? And with that, I guess we are going to have to sign off. Robert, was
that's
there...
Right.
Thanks
for having me again, guys. I really appreciate it.
Oh, sure. You'll be back on again sometime, I'm sure. Thanks a lot for all the callers that called in, and thanks a lot for everybody who's listened. This has been a great, great episode, and hopefully many more to come. James, take it away with the music.
All right. Oh, yeah, almost forgot.
Yeah, okay.
Take the red pill.
Take the red pill.